Welcome to Board Game Workshop. I'm your host, Chris Anderson. I am here with comedian and new board game designer, Grant Lyon. Grant, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Happy to be here.
What got you into board game design? I assume you were a comedian first?
Yes. I've been a comedian for like 15 years. I started when I was in college. I've been a real professional making my living at it for like about 8-9 years now. As in board games, it takes a while to make it an actual source of income and stuff. So, you know, I knew it was what I wanted to do. I knew comedy was what I wanted to do early on. You know, I started doing it when I was like a sophomore in college, and you know, I didn't really do it when I was in college. I was doing it for fun. I wasn't really taking it that seriously. And then, you know, when you're a senior in college, everybody asks the million-dollar question over and over. It's like, what are you going to do after you leave college? And I was like, boy, I thought this was going to last forever.
Master's degree, that's so, what you're doing.
Yeah. So that was like the first time I started taking comedy seriously. And, you know, as with anything that is creative, it just takes a lot of your effort and time and commitment and determination and all that sort of stuff to make it happen. So, you know, there was a time I was living in San Francisco off of like $18,000 a year, eating top ramen every meal. And then thankfully it's worked out for me. And now I actually make a real living at it. And, you know, I think as an artist, one of the things I've always thought about is, okay, how do you create, you know, other sources of income, right? Because my job, I'm only getting paid when I'm on stage, but the times I'm on stage, you know, are very up and down, right? There's sometimes where you're making a lot of money from gigs and sometimes when you're making zero money from gigs. And so as any type of artist, I think you need to think about like a passive income and, you know, like that for me has been comedy albums or, you know, books or things like that. I never actually thought about that in terms of the world of board games. I was always somebody that loved board games. You know, I was a Magic the Gathering player when I was a kid and really enjoyed it, but, you know, never took it super seriously. I had, a few thousand cards or whatever. And then once I got to high school, I got into other things and my Magic cards just gathered dust in a closet. And it wasn't until like probably about 6 years ago that my friend in Los Angeles started hosting game nights, mostly for other comedians. He's a comedian and started hosting game nights for comedians. And it opened my eyes to the world of modern board games. And, you know, the games that got me into the modern world are some of the ones that I think probably are the ones that get a lot of people into it, right? Like Codenames, Telestrations, Cash and Guns, you know, these ones that are still pretty light, still pretty social and party. But they're not just like the boring old Scrabble and Monopoly that you're used to.
Yeah.
And so I got into playing board games, but still didn't think about designing it. And I actually have a friend that I know through the world of like filmmaking, whose day job is doing like art design for board games and video games and different things like that. He's a graphic designer and has multiple published games out there. And he was actually the one that approached me and was like, hey, every game I've done up to this point has been sort of light strategy family affair. I want to do something that's a little funnier, a little more adult. Are you interested in working on something like this? And I was like, oh, well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I love games. I never really have thought about that. And so I kind of was invited into the world of board game design. And
that's interesting. That's not a story you hear very often, that a graphic designer found the designer to do a board game.
Yeah, totally. And you know, honestly, it's been a real marriage made in heaven with Adam, because Adam is the guy I co-designed the game with. And it's been, we just bring such, we both are very talented and our talents are sort of on the opposite ends of the spectrum, you know? And yeah. So they very much complemented each other. There are times where we definitely butt heads and we definitely think that we're right and they're wrong and stuff like that. But overall, I think the game is way better than it would have been if either one of us was doing it by ourselves. You know, he's made it look really great. He understands sort of board game theory more than I do, you know, in terms of how to get stuff done. But I understand like social experiences and how to give people a humorous time. And, you know, I'm the guy with a lot of writing, and the game is sort of a humorous game. So it's like I've done a lot of the writing of the cards and the rule book and all that sort of stuff, yeah. You know. So I'm very grateful to have.
You mentioned a bit that he asked you if you wanted to do something a little more adult, funnier. Did he say a party game, or was that just implied?
I think it was just implied. I mean, he essentially was like, I want to work on... his main thing was, I want to work on something funny. Like, yeah. The games that he has had published, you know, one of the things I didn't realize before this is, like, how hard it is to get a game published, right? Here is a guy, this guy, Adam... he has two published games, and now Curmudgeon, Our Game Together, is his third published game, and still has maybe 8 or 9 other game designs that are finished and that are good that have not been published, right? You know, it's, I've played some of his other prototypes, and I'm like, man, I can't believe this isn't a game that's out there, but you just have to find the right partner at the right time for stuff.
Yeah, so it's definitely an element of luck in getting it all to come together, because there's just so many designers now, and there's more publishers, but not nearly as many as there are designers. So it's a big crowd to fight through. Even totally. If you're all good, just getting that right connection, that right time, and hitting the market at the right time too.
Yeah, and you know, along those lines, you know, we had been pitching my game Curmudgeon to a lot of different companies. We were going to Gen Con, we were going to Origins, we were going to these different places and setting up meetings and pitching to a lot of different publishers. And it was always getting good feedback, but nobody was pulling the trigger. You know what I mean? It's hard when people were having good experiences with it, but nobody was like, yes, I want to publish it. And actually the way we found our publisher was we had demoed it for 25th Century Games at Origins in 2019 in June. He liked it enough that he asked for a prototype. He had played it a few times, you know, but still was on the fence. And then we ran into him at a bar at Gen Con like 2 months later. And he was like, oh, I've liked your game. Do you have it with you right now? Can we play it in this bar at midnight? And he got some of his other sort of trusted board game confidants to play with us. You know, he was like, oh, here's a designer that I like. Here's a guy who works for a different company and I respect his work. And we all sat down and played like a 6-player game of Curmudgeon at like midnight in a bar, and everybody liked it so much. And like literally right after that, he was like, I want to publish this game, right? So even that was, you know, we'd had good meeting with him. He had played the game and liked it, still hadn't taken the leap into I want to publish it until we just random happenstance ran into him, played the game, had a great time, right? But I think that's a good lesson in that you create opportunities for yourself, right? If you're going to these things, if you're being in the right places, if you're continuing to get the word out and play your game and make sure it's a good experience, then eventually you will find the right person and the right partner. It just takes time and patience.
It definitely can. So let's step back a bit. So how did you go about designing it? So you talked about how you started, but like, where'd you go from there when it was just the idea of let's make a fun game?
Yeah. So Adam and I, you know, when he first approached me and said, hey, I want to, I'm looking for a partner to design a funny, humorous game. Are you interested? Then we started just throwing some ideas back and forth at each other. And the idea of Curmudgeon was, you know, a lot of the ideas that we were throwing back and forth weren't bad, but they also weren't like aha type of ideas, right? You know, you're going, okay, there's something there. All right. Yeah, we could work with that. And then he threw the idea of Curmudgeon out, and right away it was like, yes, that's the one. That's the idea, right? Like and the funniest part of it is, you know, the game is 80% different than it was in that first meeting, right? It's not the same game at all. And yet we still both were like, there is something worth working on here. And so I think anything that gets to market, any product, right, game or otherwise, has to start with that idea that excites you, right? Because then you're also going to put in the work and like, because I was like, I believe in this idea, right? From the very first moment, it was like, I like this. I want to do this. And so they also, you have that sort of creative juice and energy behind it. And so then we started getting together maybe every other week and just talking about like, okay, well, how could this game work? Okay, we're doing, you know, we kind of knew that we wanted it to be this sort of silly, creative insult game, and we wanted it to focus on like funny and silly and ridiculous and not on mean. So, okay, how do you accomplish that, right? And so we started, you know, I'm sure everybody, you know, has this sort of stuff, but when you look back at the pictures of like your first, like, you know, note cards that you are playing with and that sort of stuff, you're like, man, these ideas just come so far, right?
They definitely do.
Yeah, in the design. And so, you know, for the first 6 months, it was just the two of us kind of talking about, all right, how do we think this works? Okay, here's this. This goes here. This does this. How do we finish it? Right. And you're just kind of theoretically talking about it. Right. It's the game, because it is a social game, is a 3 to 6 player game, you know, and doesn't really work with 2 players and that sort of stuff. Cause it's just, it needs that like social aspect of it to work.
Yeah.
So all of our conversations were essentially theoretical conversations, because we weren't, you know, we were kind of sometimes like being like, okay, I'm going to control 2 players, you control 2 players, we're going to do a mock 4-player game with the 2 of us. But it's hard to really get an idea of what it is when it's just the 2 of you.
Yeah, you don't have the feeling when you're pretending to be multiple people.
Yeah, totally.
I'd say especially with a party game. Like with a strategy game, you can fake it and do the math. But when you're looking for what's the feeling of a group of friends insulting each other, you need a group of friends.
And most party games, right, it comes down to the experience, not the winner, right? I mean, you're playing the game for the memorable moments and the jokes and the laughter and the camaraderie. You're not playing the game to be like, boy, I really figured out the best way to think through this, you know?
I am the best insulter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that I like about the game personally, is that when people walk away, they don't talk about like, oh, remember that time when Joe won that game. They go, oh, remember that time that this person said this, and that person could have come in last place, but they had the joke of the night and they still feel like a winner.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, that first play test was rough though. And that was another time where I was very grateful to have somebody more experienced than I at game design, because I walked away ready to cry and quit.
Yeah, that's a common feeling that first time.
Yeah, and I had no idea, because I'd never done that before. So I was just like, we just wasted 6 months. Okay, wash our hands of this. Good luck to you, sir. You know, and it wasn't until he was like, no, that's okay. That happens all the time. We need to just figure out, you know, we learned a lot of what doesn't work. Now we need to figure out what works.
So would you say there's any parallels to how stand-up works for you? Like, was your first show amazing, or was it a rough experience? So from what I hear, you always think it's good regardless of how it went.
Yes. I think I have a theory with stand-up. This is a theory born from years of talking to people. Your first show has to go well. And it doesn't actually have to go well. It has to be perceived well in your mind, right? Yeah. Even if that meant getting one laugh, but that laugh was good enough that's what your brain focused on. Because I think there are so many people that do a show and their first show is bad and they go, well, I don't ever want to do that again, right? They could have been hilarious, but they just had a bad first experience. Now, oftentimes in my experience, your first show goes well, and then your 2 through 10th show go very poorly, you know? So you just keep eating it time after time after time. But that first one was enough of a drug, like an addiction point almost, that you keep coming back because you're like, yeah, but remember how that one felt.
I can do it.
Yeah,
I can do it.
Exactly. You know, my first show I ever did, it was an open mic on my college campus, and I was so excited. I had to follow somebody doing like deep, dark poetry. It wasn't a comedy open mic. It was like an anything open mic. And somebody did this like really intense poetry. And then I got up and was like, here's 5 minutes of jokes. And
you gotta balance the night.
Yeah, exactly. But it went so well in my mind that I left my car and ran home. I was just like, I was just so excited. I was just like, this is the greatest thing ever. And I just ran all the way back to my apartment. Yeah, it was great. So, but you know, after that first playtest, then it was really interesting because, you know, like I said, my buddy Adam, his games that he had done before this were definitely, you know, not heavy strategy or anything, but definitely strategy focused. Whereas this game, Curmudgeon, is experience focused. And so it's almost like we made it too strategic at the beginning.
Yeah.
And people were like, what? This is too complicated. Like, you have overcomplicated this for what this game should be. And so kind of every meeting after that was the main goal of every meeting for the next 2 years was like, how do we distill this down to the most fun parts? Right? How do we make the game, how do we orbit the game around these two experiences? Because these are what people have fun with. Right. Yeah. And so it's like, so the way the game works is everybody has life cards. So you're not insulting like your friend, you're not looking at your friend and just being mean and insulting them. Like, we didn't want that. It's like everybody has life cards, and the life cards could be something like your hamster or your earlobes or something like that. It'll just give you a prompt. And then you have sort of keywords in your hand, and they might be like annoying or table, or, you know, just words like that. And it's up to you to sort of put the words together sort of Mad Lib style into like a silly, funny insult.
Yeah.
And some of the things that we first did was, well, in order to even throw out an insult, you had to like meet a certain amount of rage. Like, we had these rage fuel cards, and it was like, I stubbed my toe and I got stuck in traffic, so I want to say this to you. And it was like funny sometimes, right? But it was just so many extra steps.
Funny once you got to it.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just like people were just looking at their cards too much and going, okay, does this add up to this? And okay, now I've got this, so I could do, wait, and then one of my, and we were like, whoa, 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 like it doesn't, like, we're way too overcomplicating. And then one of the most fun, like, aspects of the game is if you insult somebody else, then they can throw a retort card down on you. And retort cards are a little more structured. It'll be kind of like a fill in the blank or a finish the sentence or something like that. It's like, you know, every time you walk by a playground, the kids say dot, dot, dot. Or, you know, you haven't talked to your mom on the phone in 4 years because dot, 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 right? And those are really, people have a great time with those because those sort of become like the one-up sort of thing, right? It's like, oh, well, yeah, well, yeah, well, yeah, well. And the whole table's like, oh, 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 right? And to me, it's like those, I love games that have those sort of big emotional reactions.
Yeah.
But when we were first, when we first came up with a game, every one of those retort cards had numbers on it, and you had to keep, like, you basically had to keep the math equation in your brain as you were doing them. It's like you threw a retort down of three, so now I got to throw a retort down of three, and then you threw one down of one, so I can beat that one with a two, and if you have a one or a two, you can meet and exceed, and then it was like whoever put down the most, and it was just like, right, the joke was getting lost in the math of trying to figure out, wait, who's put down more retort points, right?
Probably not a great sign for a party game.
Exactly. And so that's what I mean, where like, I think Adam wanted to do that sort of stuff originally because he comes from the world of sort of light strategic games, and that's more of a strategic experience, right? Less of a party experience. And so him being the more experienced game designer between the two of us, I probably deferred to him more at the beginning, right? Because I was like, well, you've done this before, you know what you're doing. And then it wasn't until we started actually getting playtesters where I was like, okay, now I'm going to give more of my input because I get what's funny and like what people respond to here. So like all of that's got to go. And so, you know, what we came up with instead was like, well, we wanted a little bit of a structure with the like retorts because there's got to be some end point, right? Yeah. And so now it's just Uno style. It's you got to match the color or the symbol, but there's a ton of them in there. There's like five different colors, six different symbols. Like the probability that you can match something is fairly high. And so you still get that boom, 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 boom sort of aspect of it. But it's not like I have to do math while I'm doing it. I'm like, oh, I see red. I know what that color is. Here I go. Here's a red one I have.
So digging a bit more into the game structure, because, I mean, I haven't played the game. I only know what I've seen in your unboxing video. But yeah. Party games, at least the successful ones, tend to be very minimal rules, but very high on content, by which you usually have like a deck of hundreds of cards, and each card is unique. Whereas strategy games can usually go very simple on components, like some colored cubes, but very in-depth on rules. So what's it like working on that kind of game? Because I have not worked on too many party-style games. I'm usually, what's a cool gimmick mechanic with, you know, cubes or some basic cards, but going heavy content where you have to write a bunch of different things and, you know, is this a good word? Is that a good word? We only have so many spaces. How do you dig through that sort of thing?
Well, I mean, some of it, similar to, you know, any strategy game too, is playtesting, right? You just gotta keep playtesting, because there were words where I was like, I thought that word was like a fun word to insult, but every time it's come up, people seem to struggle to be able to come up with an insult for it, so we gotta cut that word, you know? So but the difference is, right, we are throwing a lot of content at the wall. The game comes with 330 cards.
Jeez.
It is a card-based game. There's nothing else in the game other than the microphone player indicator that's not just cards. And, you know, one of the things that we did, we realized about sort of how to make our game different than some other party games is a lot of party games do not trust the creativity of the people that are playing. Yeah. You know, it's here, this is a completely pre-written card and you're just plugging the card in at the right time. But you're not doing anything funny. You don't have any agency over this game at all. And quite frankly, those games are boring to me. Like, I don't want to play, you know, Cards Against Humanity or What Do You Meme or anything like that, because not only, you know, being offensive, it's like boring to me. Yeah. And so our game, we really tried to say, okay, here's some framework, here's some structure, but you get to be creative in it, right? You are the one finishing these sentences and doing different stuff. So because of that, it's probably not going to be the right game for everybody, but the people that like have a modicum of creativity love the game because they're like, oh, I get to be funny here. You know, yeah. I'm supplying some of this stuff. But we also didn't realize that at first. That was something that I had essentially when we first, the very first play test of the game, I had pre-written like 200 jokes for the game.
Jeez.
Like full cards, like this is a full insult on this card, right? I've pre-written all of these stuff. And it was a weird time in my life because I was just walking around being like, ooh, that could be an insult. Ooh, that could be an insult, right? I'm just looking at people thinking of insults all the time. And, you know, when we play tested that first time, both Adam and I realized right afterwards, we were like, this game, it doesn't have enough replayability. If we pre-write all the stuff, it doesn't have enough replayability at all. Let's strip that away and give the creativity back to the people that are playing it, but still provide enough framework that, you know, I've had people go, oh, I'm not going to be able to play this game. I can't come up with stuff. And I have yet to play it with somebody that isn't able to do it. Because half of the time, the stuff that is the most ridiculous and makes the least sense is the funniest, right? It's like, yeah, if you just throw random words together, it's so crazy that it ends up being funny. So you don't have to sit there trying to come up with some epic insult. You're just like, these are three words I have. I'm going to put them together in a sentence, you know? but it is interesting, you know, it is that the focus of the game wasn't, the focus of the playtest wasn't, you know, figuring out the mechanics of the game. You know, after that first playtest, I think we pared it down fairly quickly and sort of got to the core of the experience. And then a lot of the playtests after that were just figuring out the right ratio, figuring out the right cards, you know, literally like some playtest was, this card doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand the wording on this card, right? Yeah. Or, you know, you do those blind playtests where you just watch people do it and go, they didn't play that card the way we thought people were going to play that card. So maybe they did it better. Maybe we should change that card, or maybe we need to make the wording more clear on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the interesting things too was me being a comedian, right? Like one of the feedbacks, because we didn't just, we tried to play test it at game stores in Los Angeles and stuff like that. And I tried to make the rule book like really joke heavy initially.
I have heard not great things about people who try to do that.
Oh, yeah. And I heard that very, very quickly. Basically, people were like, look, if you have, you know, five jokes in the rule book, people are going to go away. It can be a 6-page rule book. If there's five jokes in there, people are going to walk away from it going, that was a humorous rule book. You don't need a joke in every sentence. It convolutes me trying to figure out the game. I want to learn what the game is. And you just keep doing these bits all the time. You know,
it's a tough balance.
Yeah. So we cut down a lot of, I mean, we probably cut out a third of the rule book from the first iteration of it, just sort of losing these like extra flair stuff.
I think just the length of it can be overwhelming before anyone reads a word and realizes their jokes.
Totally. Yeah, totally. Well, and that was the other thing where people were like, you know, people open it up and they're like, I thought this was a party game. Why is this an 8-page rule book? You know,
they're not used to rules having pages, never mind multiple.
Yeah, exactly. But that was like literally the feedback was, I thought this was going to be easy. I opened the rule book and I'm already overwhelmed and I don't like that. And so, you know, now our rule book is like 4 pages, essentially.
Yeah, I was very surprised how overwhelmed people are with rules when I first started this, but as I realize it, and as I go to play games myself, I'm like, this is a lot of words. I don't know what's going on. And I'm a reasonably smart person with a long history of playing games. And I'm still overwhelmed by just the first look at a medium rule book. Cause it's a lot to read.
Yeah. It's now I don't know about you, but the way I learn a new game now is I read the rule book and then watch a how-to video and then read the rule book again, essentially. And now I'm like, okay, I've gotten it multiple ways. Now it's in there. Now it's like sunk into my brain.
My trick now is I only play prototypes. So either I made up the rules myself or someone else has to explain it because there's no rule book.
Yeah, totally. Smart man.
So another thing I wanted to get into, on the very cover of the box, it says, Curmudgeon, a game of silly insults, dummy. Knowing how many party games go much raunchier for a certain crowd, and they do quite well. You intentionally went sillier with this to make it not quite so adult, right?
Yes.
So,
I mean,
what was the choice behind that, and how'd you go about that balance?
Well, the choice behind it partly was in that decision of sort of giving the creativity back to the players, right? In the sense that there's the framework, but you're doing some of the work. You know, you've got cards that have words on it, but there are single words or maybe two words, and you're finishing the sentence. You're filling in the blanks. And so for that reason, it felt like, well, why make the cards dirty or raunchy? Because the people can do that themselves, right?
Yeah.
This game is essentially as dirty or as clean as the people who are playing it. Now, there are still, like, you know, suggestive things in there. I think there's a card that says, you know, this middle finger is for you. So it's like, all right, well, you don't want to play that with like a 10-year-old, but it's not, I'm not saying F you on the cards or anything like that.
Yeah.
Right. And we've played it with people where, I mean, it is as filthy as you can think of, because all of the words that they are putting in between the words that we give them are dirty and swear and things like that. And I've also played it with, you know, like my conservative mother, who was like, who would get up and walk out if you said, you know, hell or something like that. Yeah. And she was like, this was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was worried, but you know, if you have that type of person, you don't have to take these words to a dirty place. You can just be silly and fun with it. And I think, you know, also just, you ask, why do we do that? That also fits my comedic voice. You know, I think when someone asks me to describe my comedy, I always think of it as intellectually silly. I want to be like goofy and smart. And hopefully this game is accomplishing that as well. I've never wanted to be like a, you know, like a mean comedian. Like, I'm not somebody that like looks into the audience and picks on people. I'm always like, these are the nice people that came out to the show. Why would I be mean to them?
So you don't want to pick on anyone, but you make a game about insults. Makes
I know.
Sense.
I know. It is. I think some people are surprised by it, but we've tried to position the game as like ridiculous and silly and not mean, because I really want people to understand that experience. One of the comments that we got at Gen Con 2019, when we were doing some playtesting in like the unpublished hall, mm-hmm. was someone wrote, it's an insult game that can't really get personal. I like it. You know, but it is, that's kind of what I wanted, where it's like, I don't like roasting stuff where you're like looking at someone and specifically like making fun of them. But when I was a kid, I always loved those classic like yo mama jokes, right? Like those sort of like amorphous, like I'm not talking about your mom specifically, I'm just making this silly. I always thought those were funny. So it was kind of like, how can I make a game like that? You know?
Yeah, the over the top ridiculousness of it makes it less hurtful.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, I'm insulting your guinea pig. I'm sorry if you actually have a guinea pig, but most likely you don't. So
So is there anything else you want to say about the game before we switch over? Because I want to talk about your YouTube channel too.
No, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about the game. It's been an interesting experience, and I'm excited to do more. You know, I think that's one of the things, before you get into any of the board game designing or any of that sort of stuff, people don't realize how big the world is. And it's been eye-opening to me the last few years, and I'm excited to be part of the community. I also like how supportive the community is. You know, I think in comedy, there is still this attitude of like, well, if you got something, that means I didn't get it. And we're all trying to compete for the very small slice of the pie. Yeah. But it feels like board games still has the feeling of like, a rising tide raises all ships, right? Like we're all in this together. We're all trying to like spread the hobby. We're all trying to get new people into it. And I think it's working. And I, I feel grateful to be part of the community.
Yeah, I was just editing the episode with the finalists from my design contest today, which I'm very behind schedule on getting that posted, but it should be out before this one. So listeners, you've already heard it. But one of the things that came up in all 7 of the interviews with the finalists is like, they love the community. They love how helpful everyone is. And it's still been a really nice thing, even as the community grows and things, it's starting to lead a little more professional in like how people organize themselves, how businesses function, which I think in a lot of ways is good for like paying people and tax purposes and organization. But it stays very friendly. Even publishers that would technically be competitors in the marketplace, they're friends. They help each other. They work with each other. They'll send a game over to another publisher if they think it's better for them. So it still is that great community, which I hope stays as it grows.
I hope so too. Because I mean, that was one of the things I was surprised about. Like at a comedy club, I have to send 50 emails to get 5 responses when it comes to comedy clubs. Yeah. And you know, with board game publishers, if you email 50 publishers saying, you know, I have a game I'd love to show you, you're going to get 30 responses. You know, yeah. People are willing to sit down and check out your game, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So your game comes out, I think you said the 25th in the email?
It does. Yes, it comes out. Yeah.
Which will be the past by the time this is up.
Yeah. So. November 25th. So yeah, check it out.
And where can they go to check that out?
Well, it will be on in friendly local game stores. I know it'll be on Amazon. It'll be on different online game markets. And then you can also get it direct from the publisher, 25th Century Games. So if you went to curmudgeongame.com or 25thcenturygames.com, you can find it there as well.
Awesome. And I will put all those links in the show notes.
Thank you.
So, shifting now, you also do a YouTube channel, which... I'm forgetting the name of it. I think it's just your name doing
games. It's just my name. Yep.
So simple to remember. But I watched a couple of them and I like it because it's short, and short is nice. Especially, I find that sometimes I don't have time to sit down and watch a 2-hour movie, but I can definitely waste 4.5 hours watching 2-minute videos.
True. Yeah. It's weird how YouTube works like that.
Yeah. It just sucks you right in.
Yeah.
So, how'd that start? And you already talked about how you got into playing games. Was it near the beginning of that? Was this a more recent thing? How long ago did you start it?
The game videos are actually a more recent thing. So I've been working on the game Curmudgeon for about 4 years. And, you know, as getting more and more involved in the world by going to some of these conventions and stuff, right? Like, you can't go to a convention and not bring home multiple games. And so my own personal collection started growing and growing. And I'm also lucky that I live with a couple of other comedians that also like board games, right? So
yeah.
So we play them as a house together a lot. And you know, at this point, like, they're buying some games, I'm buying some games, things like that. So we're all sort of contributing to the house library. And the reason I started making these videos was actually during the pandemic. You know, all of our lives stopped so suddenly in March. And you know, that was at a time where there was a lot more fear around it too, right? Because we didn't really know what was going on and nobody knew what to expect. And so we weren't really leaving our house at all or anything like that. And so the four of us, the three other comedians that I live with, were just playing games nonstop that first month, sort of midway, you know, halfway through March through like mid-April, we were just playing games nonstop because there was kind of nothing else to do. And it was a nice way to keep our minds active too. And so my whole Game Rec series sort of was born out of, man, I really feel like these board games are giving me so much joy and really helping me through this hard time in a way that I never gave them credit for before.
Yeah.
And you know, most of my friends in my friend group, they're mostly comedians. So I'm the one that knows the most about games, right? I know little compared to people that have been in like board games for 10 years, you know, but I still know more than all of my friend group. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to start making some videos just like short, funny, quick videos about good games. So maybe I can help some other people find some good games during this tough time. So when I first started doing it, my whole like impetus was, these games are like saving my life. I want to help other people find some good games. And then it's just sort of grown and grown from there. And I've had such a great time doing it. And people have really responded well to them. So, you know, at first, we didn't know how long the pandemic was going to be. So I was like, well, I'll make these videos for 2 or 3 months, you know, just kind of putting them on my social media and stuff. And then, you know, life will get back to normal and I'll move on. And obviously life has not gotten back to normal. And I've really enjoyed making the videos and really enjoyed learning some new games because of the videos. So I'm going to keep doing them even when the pandemic is, you know, even when life is completely back to normal, I'll keep making these videos. And, you know, you say they're short and humorous, and that was partly for me. It was, well, okay. I mean, there's people that have been making 10, 15 minute in-depth review videos for 10 years. Why would I do the same thing that they're doing? Like they've been doing it and doing it well for a long time. So I need to do something different. Well, I'm going to make them humorous because obviously I'm a comedian, so I'm trying to bring that into them, right? You bring your own skill set into whatever you do. So yeah. I was like, short and funny. That's what I'm going for, short and funny. But actually try to give like real advice about some games, right? I'm not just going to review a game because I own it. I'm going to do it because I actually think this is a good game, and I'm going to say why I think it's good and why I think you would like it.
Cool. Yeah, I've enjoyed the ones I've seen so far. And you've got a couple of some of my favorite games, like Deep Sea Adventure, which I think was your first one.
That's one of my favorite games. Yeah.
That's a solid choice.
That's one of my favorite games too. And it felt like such a great recommendation for pandemic stuff because it was like, you can play it from 2 to 6 people. It's fun at all of those player counts and it's super cheap and you can bring it anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a great pandemic game.
And it's available at Target now, which is a big improvement over the trickier ways to get it before.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I love that game.
Cool. Well, I think that about does it for our time. Is there anything else you'd like to throw out there? Any contact info or things you have coming up, which is probably not much since we're still in the pandemic.
Yep. Well, you can check out my game videos at youtube.com/GrantLyon, LYON. And then follow me on social media. You can always check my website, GrantLyon.com, for any future tour dates when I have them again. And lastly, I just want to say a very heartfelt thank you for having me. This was a really interesting, good conversation, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on us. It's great talking to you and learning a little more about the comedy world. I'm a fan, but I've never been inside it myself. So.
Awesome. Well, happy to talk.
Interesting stories.
Yeah, for sure.
That's all for this episode. Financial support for the Board Game Workshop is provided by our annual game design contest and our Patreon supporters. Special thanks to our Inventor-level supporters, Bas Kadath, Roscoe Shock, Brad Batchelor, and Chris Turner. If you would like to support the show, go to patreon.com/theboardgameworkshop. You can contact the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Discord. Go to theboardgameworkshop.com for links, past episodes, and information about our design contest and other events. Thanks for listening!